Welcome back into the Red Zone Podcast. My name is Colton Bartholomew, UW football beat reporter here for the Wisconsin State Journal, joined by longtime football and basketball beat reporter Jim Polzine, soon to be columnist. I should probably change the intro here, Jim. Soon to be State Journal columnist Jim Polzine. And it has been a month, Jim. We've had a lot of stuff going on here at the State Journal, lots of good stuff for you guys to be checking up on. We're wrapping up spring practices, coming to an end, this busy time as the school gets ready for finals and such. So just how are you feeling right now?
I'm feeling good. Like, it's been a weird off season for a lot of reasons, just because we were talking before the show, like the transfer portal makes it a different off season for when you cover a major program. It just changes the dynamics of, you know, what is usually a pretty quiet time is no longer a quiet time. So, you know, May might be a little bit more busier than usual, and we'll get into some reasons why it might be even more busy. But it's just, you know, getting ready for this columnist job too is just makes it a little different. My mind's kind of scattered and things I want to do in the future and things I'm trying to do now. So it's busier than normal.
Yeah, no, I hear you there. For today's show, we're going to be wrapping up spring practices. There's only got two left by the time you guys hear this, only one that's open to the media. But we're going to talk about, you know, the stuff that we've seen, the winners, the question marks, kind of wrapping it all up there. Talk about the NFL draft that's going on this weekend. Going to be a quieter one for Wisconsin, but talk about some of the guys who might get picked. And then talk a little bit about Wisconsin men's basketball, what's going on with the program there. Some stuff that might be out there you might have seen about assistant coach Orlando Tucker. So we'll get into all of that as well. So lots of stuff to talk about. We'll jump into it right after this. All right, Jim. So we're going to start with wrapping up spring practices. And I want to start with, it's been really nice to watch. These are the first practices that I've seen since I started on the beat back in September of 2019, which is kind of wild when you think about it. But it's also been weird because so many guys have been out at some key positions like running back and on the defensive line, especially at nose tackle. It's just been kind of weird to try to judge some of these practices for, you know, who's doing or what position groups or what parts of the game look good on either side, because you're just like, well, this isn't a full varsity team. Like, this isn't what you'd put out there on a Saturday, you know, when we get to the fall. So it's just been one of those balancing out, like, what you see versus, okay, but how accurate is that?
Yeah, I always, like, when I've been to practice in the past, I've always struggled a little bit with what to watch, because when they're not in 11-11 or 7-on-7, they're really spread out across the whole field. And, you know, you kind of find yourself wondering, you know, what's important? What do you want to watch? And what might you miss if you're not watching a specific, you know, position group? So that's always been the challenge to me, is kind of, you know, where to have my eyes. And, like, obviously quarterbacks is probably the one that you just naturally find yourself watching, the quarterbacks or the receivers or the running backs, D backs. So it's, you know, it's, going to practice is great. You can always learn a lot from it, but it sometimes can be a little bit overwhelming.
Yeah, I hear you there. The nice thing, though, is especially when you can compare it to what you saw last fall to, you know, winter off season to now, I think the wide receiver and the cornerback groups, those are the easiest ones to see. And there's been some really good steps forward there. And we'll get into those in a little bit. But going back to what we were just talking about, it's hard to tell on the inside. Like, you hear coaches rave about a guy like Jack Nelson, the redshirt freshman guard, who's looking like he's going to be a starter, but it's hard to see where his hand placement is when you don't have that eagle eye from the backside, and or, you know, a quarterback's footwork, just because I don't think that, even as a reporter, I've got a 100% understanding of every nuance that a quarterback has to do footwork wise to be successful. So I think the encouraging thing when you watch these spring practices is the groups that have had the most healthy bodies, you can see the development and you can see potential playmakers coming out. I mentioned the wide receivers and the corners, and I would throw the tight ends in there as well. But I just think seeing all those guys and seeing the steps forward they make, I'm going to put a prediction out here. I don't think we're going to see the inept offense that we saw for a lot of the season last year this fall.
Yeah, I'd be surprised too. I just think the, you know, we've talked about this a million times, but I just think the, the makeup of that season and the, you know, the difficulty to keep continuity with players and coaches out of the mix and injury because of injuries and COVID. I agree with you. I think, you know, knock on wood, if they stay healthy, I think it could be a pretty productive offense. And we certainly expect it to be a pretty good defense too. So combine those things and it's got the makings of a pretty good team, but that's a long ways away. You've seen every practice now. Let's break this into some categories. Who are your biggest winners of UW spring practice 2021 so far?
Sure. So I think I would have to start with Jack Eschenbach, one of the tight ends. I mean, when you look at that tight end group, you know Jake Ferguson, what you're going to get out of him. He's going to be your number one guy. He's going to be out there almost every offensive play. But they have shown a lot that they want to have multiple tight ends on the field, and shows how they feel about this group, the depth that they have there. And I think Eschenbach, I mean, I said this when Ferguson was on the podcast a couple weeks ago. There are times if I don't see the number, I would legitimately think that Eschenbach was Ferguson, the way he was running routes and catching the ball and the speed that he brings. So I think he's a guy that the big thing for him was figuring out the blocking and just being better at it. And that's going to take time, especially when we talked about it with him a couple weeks ago, but he comes as a wide receiver and never really blocked. So trying to do that at a Big Ten level at tight end where you're blocking defensive ends and guys that are much bigger and stronger than you, it's a big change. So I think that Eschenbach will be high up there on my list for winners. I would also have to go on the other side, guy that I've seen, you know, beat Eschenbach just, you know, on some of these blocks is Spencer Lytle. You know, we've talked about him on this podcast a few times over the years. Just being a guy that hadn't really reached his potential yet for the Badgers, came in as a four-star recruit, had a lot of hype behind him. And I think the toughest thing about Lytle was that he came in his first spring and immediately flashed and started showing things that the coaches liked. And then when you get to the fall, the last 2 years, it just never happened. And a lot of it's because of injuries. I think he was one of the guys that was involved in the COVID outbreak as well. We reported on that, but I think it was just one of those things that never all came together, but then this offseason, he was finally healthy. He put up really good numbers in the weight room and things of that nature. And now he's come out in the spring and he's starting to show that guy that, you know, you could see the seeds of back in the spring of 2019.
You got a couple cornerbacks on your list too.
Yeah. So Alex Smith and Dean Ingram, I know I wrote about him on Madison.com a couple of weeks ago, but I think one of the things that this defense is going to have to do is just deepen this corner group. And it's just going to be one of those continual processes that you just got to keep reloading there. I mentioned it a couple of times, but they played nickel defense. So five defensive backs on the field, 70% of their plays last year. And it's probably only going to go up. You know, I know they have Army on the schedule this year, but the rest of the opponents that they're going to play are going to try to spread them out. So the amount of times that you're going to have extra defensive backs on the field, you've got to have more depth there. And Alex Smith and Dean Ingram are both guys that can play in the slot, helping out Fayon Hicks if he needs a break there, or if the matchup just dictates that they need to have Hicks on the outside receiver, or they can play on the outside if Hicks is fine in the slot against whoever the opponent has. So those two guys, it's going to be one of those, I would say, one of the most interesting battles of the fall is who ends up being that number three. And I'm putting air quotes, it doesn't do anything on a podcast, but who ends up being that number three corner who plays the most snaps in just our regular nickel packages. But I think it's going to be a rotation. I think when you listen to what Hank Poteet, the corners coach, has to say about those guys, what Jim Leonard says about those guys, I think both of them are going to play quite a bit. It's just to see, you know, in that first nickel group, who's out there as a number three is going to be interesting. It's going to be, you know, jockeying back and forth. And even it could change week to week. I think that's one of those things where Leonard's going to say, whoever is having the best week in practice, that's your reps going into a game. And I think that's a good thing to have in that position. And then one other guy I want to mention, I mentioned him a little bit before, but Jack Nelson. He's a redshirt freshman, local kid. Obviously his dad played here and he came in with a good amount of hype and a lot of hope around him as that first recruit in the class, but he's proven it, man. It's impressive to watch him come off the ball because you hear about it all the time in football, but if you're a little bit hesitant, it doesn't really matter if you're big and strong or if you got these things, if you don't fire off and you know, initiate the contact on your own, it's not going to work for you. You know, he's the opposite way. He's going to initiate the contact. He fires off the ball. He's a load to deal with when he gets his hands on you. It's just cleaning up some of the smaller stuff that's going to be his challenge throughout the fall or throughout the summer and the fall. But this is, I don't think that the last couple of years have been a good indicator of the type of guard that Joe Rudolph would prefer to have at this spot. I think Jack Nelson's going to be a guy that if Rudolph could build his prototype, it would be him, where he's very athletic, can move. I think he's going to be a monster when he starts pulling around the edge and taking on linebackers and guys in the secondary. But then just really moving the pile in the middle. I think they've done okay at the guard spot the last couple of years. I mean, guys were getting banged up left and right there too. But I just think that Nelson could be a guy that he's starting to show some of those early signs that he's going to be one of those just road grader type of offensive guards where you see, you know, piles that a play starts and the pile's right in the middle and then he comes in and moves it 3 or 4 yards to the left or the right. So I'm very excited about what Jack Nelson can do.
Good stuff. Now your biggest question marks from the spring so far.
Sure. So the easiest one is the running backs. And if you've read our stuff on Madison.com the last couple of weeks, you know that the running back position has been depleted to downright not having anyone. I mean, Brady Shipper, who, you know, in a normal year, it might be your third string, was doing starter reps and beyond starter reps. He was getting pretty much every running back rep after the first couple of weeks because of the injuries to Jalen Berger and Julius Davis, Isaac Arendo. These guys just haven't been able to be out there. And then, you know, of course, what happens when somebody gets all those reps, they get nicked up a little bit. Brady Shipper hasn't been able to close out spring healthy here. So I think that's just tough for that group as a whole. Not only because you've got a new coach, I mean, Gary Brown's trying to come in and not only learn these guys, but do things the way that he wants to do within the system, trying to change them a little bit. And then not having that field time, it basically puts you physically at kind of ground zero when you get to the fall. Now, mentally and understanding the concepts, they still have the meeting time and things of that nature. So you would hope that that stuff's all retained and then going as they want. But not having the field time and especially not figuring out what you have in a guy like Julius Davis or a guy like Isaac Arendo because of these injuries. It's been a persistent thing. They just cannot stay on the field. And it's very tough for, I would imagine, the entire program to go into this summer and this fall thinking, hey, we have Jalen Berger who we feel pretty good about in limited action last fall. And then nothing. And then nothing that we can really prove to the outside world in that backfield right now. And that's why you see, I mean, we're recording this Wednesday afternoon. You might have saw it Wednesday morning. There was a report out there from Rivals that Wisconsin's hot on the trail of a transfer running back from Clemson. I would not be shocked if they bring in somebody for this position in the summer. I mean, we're seeing guys hit the transfer portal after their spring practices end. I think running back's going to be a spot that, because you just don't, like I said, you just don't have anything that you know for sure in this group. And then you have three freshmen coming in that you're high on and you feel good about, but expecting them to be the immediate backup. I mean, as good as some of these guys are, I don't think there's a Jonathan Taylor in there that's just going to blast his way through the depth chart in fall camp next year. So I never want to say I expect Wisconsin to land a transfer, but I expect them to be very, very involved in the transfer market, especially for the running back position.
They have been already. Yeah. I mean, they've tried. It's not like they haven't tried. They've kicked.
Yeah. Players. I mean, yeah. Marquis Stepp, who's at Nebraska now in spring. I mean, he was a guy that they were high after. And so there's definitely momentum there. And I think the one other position is the defensive tackles. And again, it goes back to health. We just have not seen Keanu Benton and Bryson Williams be able to do 11 on 11. And like you mentioned, Jim, like, yeah, during practice, you see them do the individual stuff. They're going through drills. And especially for a guy like Benton, he's looked good in the drills. Like, you see the quickness and everything looks great. And then they get to the 11-on-11 stuff, and he's just not out there. So we haven't really got an answer on exactly what the issue there is. But I thought this spring was going to be big for Benton because not only I think just pure physical talent-wise, he's the number one guy in that defensive line group, but because of all the play that they have to do in nickel, you want to see Keanu Benton be able to figure out and play in that nickel, playing those two down sets, because you don't want to have a guy that's that good be able to play one out of three plays, you know, especially for what they think he can be game changing and pass pressure wise coming up the middle. You want to have him out there more, and then just not being able to do those 11 on 11 drills. You know, maybe I missed it. Maybe he did show the coaches things this spring that have them feeling like he can do that in the fall, but I just wasn't able to see it in the 11 on 11 sessions that we saw. So Bryson Williams, I know they knew that he was going to be a question mark coming in health-wise this spring and how much he'd go. I thought Gio Paz did a really good job filling in for those guys coming from the DN role. And, you know, you can see the quickness being a good asset for him there. I'm just questioning, you know, how much this defensive line can hold up if they're only relying on Benton and Williams at the nose tackle spot. I got to imagine that they figure out one other guy to throw in there in the mix, just because expecting these two to be healthy throughout a whole fall season, we just haven't seen it yet. So that's my two biggest question marks coming out of spring.
All right, we've heard your winners, your question marks. What do you want to see more before deciding which category they fall under?
Yeah, good question. So I think the tackle group outside of Logan Bruss, because Logan Bruss, I mean, Joe Rudolph said it when we talked to him, and you saw it throughout practices. He's just a wall. I mean, I think, honestly, when we get to this time next year, we're talking about Logan Bruss in those middle rounds, maybe even able to go higher if he has a good pre-draft process, just because I think the fundamentals are all there. The size is there. I think, you know, what NFL seems to want from an offensive tackle changes every year, but I think the size is there and the consistency is there. But I think outside of that, I mean, Logan Brown was in and out of the lineup with some, he had some illness stuff and then wasn't able to practice earlier this week. Tyler Beach moving over to left tackle, a little bit of a different challenge for him. Riley Malman played a lot of left tackle as well. And you can see, like, got to get some weight on that dude, but you can see the athleticism and the length that he has being 6'8". So I'm just like, I don't want to say that they're a big question mark, just because I think that we saw a lot of, or enough good things to have some confidence in them, but I didn't see enough out of one particular guy to say, hey, that's somebody that really stood out.
Anybody else on your want to see more list?
I think the last one I would have would be Muma Jungmeta, which is one of the all-time names, I think, of this Badger roster. But the inside linebacker, he had, you can check it out on Madison.com. He just had a crazy 2020 of injury stuff. You know, he basically had a hernia all summer, couldn't train how he wanted to, didn't know. And then because it was COVID, was basically told by his doctors, like, if it's not an emergency, don't come here. So he's dealing with a hernia, figures out that it's a hernia, has to get surgery. Then he gets COVID. And then what was the last one? Oh, he messed up his something with his leg. Now I'm blanking on it, but go read it on Madison.com. We wrote all about it. But he's healthy now in this spring. And I think that inside linebacker group was so reliant on Leo Chanel and Jack Sanborn last year. And they're going to play a ton of the snaps. You know, even if they have a completely healthy group behind them, those two guys are going to play 70-80% of the snaps just because they're that good. But having a couple of guys that you can mix in, giving them a couple of breathers throughout a game and not have a big drop-off, or maybe even just able to do some other things, I think Muma's that guy, because you saw throughout spring the quickness that he has in his first step coming off the line, the ability that he has to get through traffic and on a blitz is something that it's kind of innate. Like, I don't know how you would teach it, because he's just able to kind of slip by a running back or slip by a guard that's trying to pick him up late. That it's more natural, I think, than anything technique-wise. All that type of stuff adds up into a guy that I think that they saw coming out of high school and just haven't been able to put on the field yet. But now you go into this summer, all that looks good. Probably the only reason that I don't have him in a winner category right now is I don't think I saw more than 5 or 6 snaps pass coverage wise that would be like, oh, that looked like a good drop, or that looked like a clean break covering a tight end. So I think there's a decent amount of work still to be done in his pass coverage. But when you're just talking about a guy that can pressure the passer like they've been doing a lot with their inside linebackers. Muma's a guy that's going to be able to do it.
Good stuff on the current Badgers. Let's move ahead to the past Badgers, the ex-Badgers. The NFL draft is this week. Are you excited for the NFL draft, first of all, Colton?
I'm excited. I'm a big mock draft guy. Kind of embarrassing. I was up for like an hour last night just banging out mock drafts. I think the Broncos should hire me because PFF said I didn't get below an A- throughout like 10 nice. Or 15 drafts. So, you know, a little resume builder for John Elway. Give me a call.
You want them to draft a quarterback?
I hope not. Hard pass on anybody that's not named Trevor Lawrence in this draft. I'll be happily wrong. If it's Justin Fields and he slides to 9, maybe. But I'm all in on Micah Parsons. Maturity issues in the air quotes be damned. He's good. And they've got enough leaders on defense that can get him into shape and let him grow up a little bit. So I'm all in on Parsons. So, but back to the Badgers because nobody wants to hear my Bronco podcast, my solo Bronco podcast. They've had two guys get drafted every year since 1994. And I think this might be a year it could get broken. The best chances of the Badgers. Was
that pretty impressive streak, by the way.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But I think this is a year where the best chances they have are Cole Van Landen, Rashad Wildgoose, I would say Isaiah Loudermilk, and Eric Burrell. All of them are seventh round or priority free agent grades. Essentially, are all in right in that group. And when you get to that point, you're basically saying if they get taken in the seventh round, it's because a team didn't want to have to negotiate and try to outbid other undrafted free agents. I think it's just one of those tough years for the Badgers group because all of them have significant drawbacks to their games that don't quite match up to what maybe the production they had in college or what you saw from them in college. Like, we'll get into a couple of them, but a guy like Rashad Wildgoose looked good when he played, but he played two games last season and then gets injured. And that's not his fault or anything, but when you're asking NFL teams to spend a draft pick on you and you don't have that, especially at corner where it's like, I don't have this tape against number one guys in the conference year after year, it's a tough sell. And then Cole Van Landen had a couple of years to really establish himself as one of the elite tackles in college football. I don't think it happened. And I think a lot of it comes down to just was never able to be 100% healthy. And from what I understand, the stuff that he played through over his career would have knocked out a lot of other guys. So you got to commend him for the toughness. I just think it might just the things that he dealt with, just the strength not being able to always show up on tape or the balance not being able to show up on tape because he's injured and playing through it, that's going to help you or that's going to hurt your draft stock. So also with Cole Van Landen, he's going from tackle to guard, and there's so many guys doing that this year. I mean, this tackle class is so top-heavy, and then when you get late, it's all these converted tackles that are going to guard just because they don't have, in Cole Van Landen's case, like he doesn't have the length or the ideal athleticism to play outside. But I think if you watch his college tape and you see what he can do when he locks his hands on guys and he's run blocking and stuff that's more attuned to playing guard, that's all encouraging, and you would feel like, even if it's a project, taking that seventh round flyer on him and getting him in your system, if you're confident in who you have at the offensive line coach, I think he's a guy that could, end up being one of those sleeper type, oh, wow, what a steal they got in the seventh round if he's able to stay healthy and develop like that. And then for Isaiah Loudermilk, you can't teach that size. I mean, there's not a lot of 6'6", 6'7" defensive tackles every year or defensive end defensive tackles every year that are going to come out. And even if, this obviously nobody would want this, but even if he just held his block and then threw his hands up, he's going to make every pass over the middle more difficult just because he can reach up and be 9.5 feet in the air. So he's got some physical things that the teams like. It's just, I think he's in a in-between spot between being a 3-4 defensive end and then, being a 4-3, maybe a defensive tackle. I think he's just kind of in a weird tweener spot position-wise. And then Burrell, as a safety, made a lot of plays in college, and you look at his highlights, and he's got a lot of good stuff to show. I just don't think it was as consistent as you would need to be to earn a draft pick in that maybe 5th-6th round area for him. There are just other lapses that it doesn't match up with the other plays. So I just think that he's going to be in that seventh round, maybe a free agent situation as well.
And then two other guys will be undrafted free agents, Adam Bay and Mason Stocky, long snapper and fullback respectively.
Yeah. If this was like 15 years ago, Stocky's probably getting drafted. Just there's only a few fullback spots in the league right now. And all those teams have a pretty, like, you got like the Niners with Juszczyk or the Raiders now with Alec Ingold. Like, the teams that want fullbacks have them and have pretty established guys. So I think it's going to be tough for him to get drafted. But I think what's the savior for that guy, for Stocky, and obviously Baby and long snapper is a specialist, and you can even throw Garrett Groshek in there. These guys are all going to be very willing special teamers to try to earn their role. And not that that's going to earn you a draft pick, because you don't often draft guys that you think are special teams as their ceiling. But I think that's going to help them when you get in that free agent mode and say like, oh yeah, I'm very willing to play special teams. I have before, especially in like Groshek and Stocky's case. So
yeah, it's a good tiebreaker, you know, if you're comparing two guys.
Yeah. I think Saturday is going to be a very late afternoon for Badgers guys, but then everybody kind of finding the home pretty quickly. I don't think they're going to be guys waiting until, you know, OTAs and maybe getting a call.
So the fact that Wisconsin finds itself in this position this year where the streak, you know, the streak of two draftees every year since 94 might get broken. I understand that some people have reached out to you unhappy. Tell us the kind of feedback you've gotten.
So like it was one email and a couple of DMs that like, this was basically some type of referendum on the program, like not being able to produce pros. Thought it was kind of, you know, convenient to ignore that that met multiple guys drafted in the first three rounds, you know, last season with Taylor and Bond and all this other stuff. I was just kind of laughing at it because it's like, it just seemed like a very casual or easy to forget that if Jake Ferguson had decided to go to the NFL this year, he's probably getting drafted in the fourth round, if not higher, depending on how he did in the pre-draft. It's just like, yeah, okay, the guys that came out might not have been able to shoot their way up these draft boards, but like there are guys that came back that are going to next year. I just thought it was silly, some of these messages that I got. And then it all comes down to like, this is all cyclical stuff. Like, especially at Wisconsin, it's going to take, it takes guys a couple of years to get on the field, then takes them a couple of years of being on the field to show what they can do in the NFL. Like, you don't get a bunch of draftable, like good draftable players without having a couple of years as you're rotating it through a couple of years where those guys are still on your roster. It's just, I understand people just want to have something to be mad about. Sports is just something that gets people fired up like that. But I thought it was funny, some of the feedback that I got.
Yeah. And like you said, it's cyclical. If this was happening a couple of years in a row, 2-3 years in a row, and it was also not showing, and if it was affecting the win-loss record, you know, like there's a lot of things you can put together and see that there should be a referendum on the program. I hate to judge things on one year, whether it's last year on the football field or this year in the draft, as being some kind of, you know, a sign that things are bad or something's going wrong. It's, you know, I think a lot of their younger guys are talented. I mean, I think they have a ton of young talent in the program, which is one reason why I'm not going to overreact to a quote unquote down season last year. And, you know, maybe going through a draft without anybody drafted or one guy drafted. It's just, I don't know. I don't think it's anything to be concerned about.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And it's funny that we talked about at the top of this segment, the Broncos going for a quarterback, because as we were talking, they traded a 6th-round pick for Teddy Bridgewater. So I think you can eliminate that opportunity or that possibility. So I'm happy. All right, let's go. All right, let's transition to a little basketball here. You guys might have seen last few days some talk about if Alondo Tucker is going to be back with the basketball program as an assistant coach. Jim, you've been hearing rumblings and reporting on this for about a month now, 5 weeks now. Just give us a breakdown. Like, what do you know right now?
Yeah, I think that's part of the problem is, you know, there's a lot more that we don't know, but I'd heard that this might be a possibility. Even late in the season, I had heard that it might not be a sure thing that Tucker was going to come back. And when I talked to Greg Gard on, I don't know, I think it was like March 24th or 25th, somewhere around there. I did ask him like, hey, do you think your staff will be back intact next season? And he kind of paused and then said there was nothing that he was aware of. He hadn't been told anything, which made me wonder at the time, he probably wouldn't have come out and said it either. But they did post a job, which, they're required to do. The 2-year, what I've been told by UW officials is that Tucker could only be an interim coach for 2 years. The June 30th, I believe, is the on or before June 30th, they had to make a decision and make that a full-time position. For background here, this is obviously Howard Moore's old spot.
Right.
Howard's not going to be coming back. And so it's, they haven't officially come out and say that, but I think posting his job is a pretty clear sign of that. So they had to open it up whether Tucker wanted to come back, whether he didn't want to come back. This was a procedural thing that had to be done. So when they posted a couple weeks ago, again, I asked around and it's been quiet, almost too quiet. Like, I've reached out to Tucker a couple times. And part of it is I've got another story I kind of want to do that I would like his help with. And I'm, explain that in my text. And it's just been silence. It's been nothing from him. So yesterday, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Jeff Patricus, did a story saying that essentially that he's probably not coming back or likely not coming back, I think is the way it was written. I reported throughout the day again yesterday and, I don't know. I was told that it's not a done deal yet. So, I didn't write anything on that matter. But would it surprise me if in a week or two, we find out for sure that Tucker's not coming back? No. I mean, I think this is a very real possibility. I just don't know where they are in the process. Without anybody actually being willing to say something on the record,
right.
Kind of a difficult thing to report. So I guess it comes down to kind of what we don't know, what I want to know. And what I want to know most of all is if he is leaving, is this his choice or is this Greg Gard's choice?
Right.
And that's the one thing that even over the last month when I've heard these rumors is I've never heard the reason why. I feel like three people reach out to me over the process on, hey, Tucker might be leaving. And I've gotten a different reason from all of them. It's certainly not something I'm going to report or say on a podcast until I know for sure. I'd really like him to explain it. And in time, he probably will. If he wants to leave this position, I could totally understand it. He's got three young kids. This is, being a college coach is a time-consuming deal.
Yeah.
Perhaps he just wants to be a father. If this is Greg Gard's choice, there'd be reasons for that too. I could understand. Maybe he wants to add more experience to the staff. It's a pretty young staff as it stands right now. So, I could see this kind of going either way in terms of the reason why, but that's something I want to know. The other thing I'd really like to know is, the gap between the end of the season and posting this job, was, I guess, a little bit strange to me. Greg Gard did tell me, like, when I talked to him a month ago, that he wanted to give guys, players, coaches some time. He thought they needed time away to just kind of decompress because it had been a long, stressful season because of COVID. And so I completely understand. And so maybe they didn't know. Maybe Greg Gard needed some time to think about what he wanted to do next too. So maybe that's the explanation for the couple week gap. Because what that gap did is, I think it limited you to some degree on the type of assistant you could get because there was a lot of spots being filled. Guys were taking other jobs. So it kind of limited the field in terms of what you could get as Tucker's replacement if he does in fact leave. So now you're looking for an assistant in late April, early May, which isn't end of the world stuff, but it is, the timing of it is all kind of interesting to me.
Yeah. And to your point, you're getting the, not to disparage any of these guys, but we'll see what ends up, if this ends up coming to pass, but like you're getting the second run, you're getting guys that weren't as attractive maybe in that first rush of change at the college coaching positions. And then, or so either you're doing that or you're trying to convince somebody who just took a job to leave again and come take your job. And that's a tough thing to do. And I don't think there are a lot of coaches that want to get that reputation of doing that. I don't think that helps you long term.
The other thing I'm thinking is, you know, I don't know that we're going to be doing a podcast, and you're going to get to this later on in the show, but this all could very well be decided before we're back talking to you. And so, you know, if he does leave, let's say he does in fact leave, you know, I've been trying to think a little bit over the last couple of days, what's the impact, you know, like the players, every player I've talked to over the years seems to love Tucker. They love his energy. They thought of him as a guy they could relate to. You know, I don't think, you know, when Kobe King left the program last year, it's the guy he went to when things were going wrong was Tucker, you know, and Tucker, I think, went over to his apartment one day to kind of, you know, talk him through things when, after the Purdue game, where things kind of, you know,
went. The fan, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, so that was a clear sign of, hey, here's a guy that they respect. You know, it's come up other times too. Like, you know, it came up with the Eric Helen situation where, you know, Eric Helen said a racial epithet, and the players that heard it weren't comfortable with what was going on. And they went to Tucker to kind of help them through and guide them through the process. So clearly here's a guy that is very well respected in the program. And so that would be a loss. He didn't, you know, 2 years is probably a little bit unfair to judge a guy as a recruiter, but he didn't have that huge of an impact on the recruiting front as I think as people would hope he would. Because again, he's a guy that knows his program, can sell his own experience here. I kind of thought he'd open some doors, you know, maybe in Chicago or elsewhere in Illinois. And so far that hadn't happened. And again, maybe that's just a little bit of a learning curve that a young coach has to go through, but I don't know that there's a lot of evidence to suggest that he was, you know, a really solid recruiter yet. So again, if he does leave, that leads me to kind of what would come next. What does Greg Gard go out and get?
On the recruiting thing, that could be a part of, I mean, if you want to be a college basketball coach, you've got to live and breathe that recruiting stuff. And in Tucker's situation where he was kind of not like they forced him to do it, but just with the situation with Howard Moore and all that stuff, he kind of got pressed into service here. Maybe he knew, maybe that's why he wasn't into coaching. Like, maybe he just knew that element. Like, he wants to coach basketball as opposed to doing all the stuff that a college coach has to do. I don't know if that's true or not. I mean, you can tell me, but I just, maybe there's a little bit of that factor that I know I wasn't going to be a great recruiter. That's probably why I wasn't involved in the coaching aspect yet.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's you know, I don't want people to think that former players can just naturally become great coaches. Cause I think there's not everybody can do it. And I think there's a learning curve to it. And you know, I think things like last year, not two seasons ago, the year they won the Big Ten championship was a trying season, right? It's coming on the heels of the Moore tragedy, which Tucker was close to that family for a long time. And that had to be hard. And I think he felt, I think he felt like it was the right thing to do to be the guy. And certainly from UW's perspective, there was no better person to hire at the time because it's late summer and you're running the risk of bringing an outsider into the program at a time where everybody's, you know, really struggling emotionally. I think Tucker was the natural fit, and I think it was a great short-term thing.
Right.
And then they go out and win a championship, and I can understand why you'd want to come back and build off that, right? I mean, I totally understand that. This year wasn't as easy, obviously, for a lot of reasons, and the team struggled, and it was probably a lot more stressful, both because of results and because of COVID. And I can also understand you wanted to take a step back after that and saying, you know, is this something I want to do? Is this something I want to do with a really young family? So again, if this is what Tucker's thinking, I could completely understand it. And maybe that someday when he does talk and speak on this subject, that's what he'll say. But, you know, the silence is just kind of, it makes it difficult right now. But getting back to kind of what I think Wisconsin needs, if Tucker leaves, I really would like to go out them to see them go out and get a guy with experience developing people, because I do think development has taken a step back. in the last couple of years. And, you know, so to go out and get a veteran coach who could help on the development front, I think would be big. I mean, you look at Michigan last year, Juwan Howard went out and hired Phil Martelli, who was a longtime head coach at St. Joseph's. And it really worked well. And I think Martelli was a guy from an X's and O's standpoint, from a development standpoint, who really helped that program. And, you know, kudos to Juwan Howard for, you know, it's going out and getting a guy who, and not feeling threatened by him, you know, not
right,
feeling,
yeah.
Here's a long time head coach who might challenge me and stuff and might not always agree with what I want to do. So personally, I think that's kind of what, you know, if there is a coaching change here, I'd like to see Greg Gard branch out and hire a veteran guy. I don't really have any names to throw out there right now. I mean, if you want to, there's guys on the Bo Ryan coaching tree that are available, and maybe that's the direction they'll end up going. I do think it's not always bad to kind of mix it up a little bit and have a different voice, a different, just a different way of seeing things. And he did that with Dean Oliver a couple of years ago. So I don't know, we'll see how this all shakes out, but it is a very interesting time for this program. And I do think if there's a hire to be made, this is a really, really important one to get right.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask you, you bring up a really interesting development point. Was that where Gard kind of fit in under the Ryan umbrella, or like, why do you think maybe that hasn't been there in the last couple of years? Cause I'm with you. Like, I think we've seen some guys plateau when they had an extra year that you would have hoped, like, hey, they would have like continued that rise. And I think that just didn't happen for some of these guys.
Yeah. You look at the end of the Bo era, the assistants were Gard, Gary Close, and Lamont Paris. And those are three very, very experienced guys. And especially, you know, Gard's a guy that had been with them 2 decades. Close had been on the staff, I think 13 years by the time he had left, and was also an assistant at you know, Iowa and Stanford. I mean, just a guy with a wealth of experience. You know, Howard, when Howard came in, he was another guy that you know, had a ton of experience. So, you know, you're going from that to, you know, the staff last year was Joe Krabbenhoff and Lando Tucker and Dean Oliver, you know, three up and coming coaches, I think, but you can't, if you just compare the experience level on the Bo staff to the experience level on Gard staff, I think it's a big difference. It's really,
no doubt, yeah.
Now the flip side is you theoretically have better recruiters and guys who are a little more gung ho on the recruiting trail. So that's, I think, the trade-off they were willing to make. But I think that's one possible reason that development maybe isn't the same. I do think Bo Ryan just had a way of getting the best out of some of his players. And, you know, I think Greg Gard is probably working through that to some degree. I do think you have to, the apples and oranges comparison is dangerous too, because last year from a development standpoint, and we've said this before on the show, but it was really hard last off season when a lot of these guys would have been on campus working out both individually and in small groups. That part just got wiped out completely. There was no spring drills. There was no 8-week summer session. And that's when a lot of the development is being done. And they just, that didn't exist because of COVID restrictions. So I do think there was, and what sounds like an excuse to some degree, but I do think that, I think that hampered some guys. I think that really, you know, set this program back from a development standpoint to some degree. I think some guys who could have been on campus and gotten individual work in weren't able to do that. Strength and conditioning too, that's the one thing we haven't mentioned. I mean, that's a lot of strength and conditioning time missed out on. So for a development program, I think that's, you know, that was a big missed opportunity and through the fault of no one really, because I just think there's so many things you couldn't control. But I think that's part of the reason why maybe that team didn't live up to what we thought it could be.
Well, that's all fair. And like, I think I want to just reiterate something you said earlier, Jim, and that you've been reporting on this. I don't think this is a done deal. I don't think people should be acting as though Lana Tucker is officially gone. I think it's just, it's a possibility, I would say, but.
Yeah. I think it's a strong, like, I don't want to put numbers on it, but I think it's a strong possibility. And I've probably gone from possibility to strong possibility, but again, like, the unwillingness is for anybody just to say anything And you know, again, part of this is there's a process to follow, right? Mm-hmm. They had to open this job up. You have to do interviews. So let's say Tucker did come out right away and say, I'm not coming back next year. This would still be a very quiet process, I think, as it plays out to hire a new assistant. So some of this isn't that surprising, but it's just kind of it's a different situation. And again, the fact that it's happening in late April complicates it to some degree.
Yeah, I'm with you there. There'll be more to follow along this year on Madison.com, checking all that stuff out when more news becomes kind of cemented, I guess I should say. As we wrap up the show, Jim alluded to a little bit ago, we're going to take a little bit of a break here in May. I went back and looked at this, Jim. We, between you, me, Otsi, and Molesky, we did 48 of the last 52 weeks. We had podcasts. The ones that we missed were in the COVID summer when we couldn't go into our office and record there, or and honestly, before we figured out a good way to do these Zooms and be able to get you guys podcasts that way. You guys heard me talk about it before, getting married in a couple of weeks. Not that this podcast takes up all that much time, but I'm not going to have all that much to give in a couple of weeks here. So, and I'll be on vacation. So that coupled with the fact that it's about to be finals, it's going to slow down a lot in May, UW-wise. There's not going to be as much news, I don't think, at least, you know, cross your fingers to talk about in that time frame. And frankly, I just don't want to bore you guys. Like, I don't want to be putting out podcasts just for podcast sake, and I want them to have good stuff in it, like we try to do every week. So, I just think that's probably the best way to do it. And I'm trying to stretch out non-stories into stories just to have a podcast.
Yeah, we're gonna decompress a little bit, both of us, at some point. You're gonna get married. That should obviously be your number one priority. So, we'll come back. We'll come back hopefully rested and better. And you know, you want people to reach out to you on Twitter,
yeah,
to kind of use this time to kind of give us some feedback on what you want.
Yeah, no doubt. And I mean, I looked at the last few weeks, and you know, when we had the players on, seemed like you guys liked those from the downloads and stuff. So if you want more player interviews, you know, hit me up on Twitter, CBartWSJ. If you like the mailbag stuff that we've done before, let me know. You know, I look at the numbers, there's between 515, 530 of you guys every week that I know download it. When I look at the numbers, some weeks we spike up, some weeks we're right about that number. So I know that we have a very, you know, solid core group right there that listens every week. We appreciate you guys. So let us know what you want, how you want the show to kind of look as we go forward here. And, you know, hopefully we get to the fall and Jim and I can be in the same room instead of looking at each other's guest bedrooms on Zoom here like we have been for the last 7-8 months. So hopefully we're able to get into some different spaces and get back together. But for Jim Polzin, make sure you're following him on Twitter, Jim Polzin WSJ. For me, Cole Bartholomew, CBartWSJ there. Thank you guys very much for listening. We'll be back in a few weeks. We will see you then.